It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See
terms and conditions. 18+. Dzień dobry, long time no here, jak to trochę ostatnio w ludziach z pracy mamy w zwyczaju, odkąd podcast wychodzi nieregularnie, ale nic się nie martwcie, nic a nic, bo coś odwlecze, to nie uciecze, jak nas raczy swoją zasobnością wór z mądrościami i jest to tradycyjnie polskie, ale też jedno z ostatnich zdań, które w tym podcaście dzisiaj pada po polsku. Chociaż bynajmniej nie z tego powodu, co ostatnio, ponieważ ostatnio rozmawialiśmy z Finami i dlatego rozmawialiśmy po angielsku, a dzisiaj nie z tego powodu nie rozmawiamy po angielsku, że mój rozmówca nie jest polskojęzyczny. Przeciwnie, jest jak najbardziej polskojęzyczny, ale ponieważ uznaliśmy, że odbiorcy tego odcinka, czyli mówiąc po staropolsku community firmy Aleph Zero, której co-founderem jest mój dzisiejszy gość, community nie jest polskojęzyczne, czyli społeczność nie jest polskojęzyczna i dlatego będziemy rozmawiać po angielsku. A rozmawiamy w dzisiejszym odcinku o kilku bardzo ważnych dla nas obojga sprawach. Wszystkie dotyczą kultury organizacyjnej firmy. Pierwsza z nich to brand. Jak na niego patrzeć, jak go rozumieć i, co najważniejsze, jak go budować. Druga sprawa to diversity. Czy ono w startupie jest możliwe? Na jakim etapie i jak podchodzić do niego mądrze. A to wszystko w kontekście blockchainowym i w kontekście organizacji Aleph Zero, która blockchainem się zajmuje i której, jak już wspomniałam, współzałożycielem jest mój dzisiejszy gość. Hi, hello, it's Rose. Welcome to the 35th episode of the podcast Ludzie z Pracy, which means people from work in English. You are listening to the most people-oriented podcast about work, and it is dedicated to everyone who works with people and would like to understand them better. It doesn't matter if you run a company, if you lead a team, or you just simply want to help someone in everyday work situations. Including yourself, of course. We are making this podcast because work takes too much place in our daily life not to understand your teammates. Feel invited to visit Spotify, YouTube, or Apple and Google Podcasts to listen to Ludzie z Pracy. Don't forget to subscribe and follow to have the latest information. Hi. Welcome to Ludzie z Pracy podcast. It's our 35th episode and actually the second episode in English. The first one was with the Finnish authors of the book Couples Therapy some time ago. This one will be recorded between two poles, but we decided to speak English because we thought it will be more practical to use English due to the fact that Aleph Zero is a super international company and due to the target of the audience and the fact that we think that problems we would like to address are much more international than local. So my pleasure to have today with me Anthony Żółciak, who is the founder of Aleph Zero and Cardinal Cryptography. Hi, Antek. It's great to see you, to hear you today.
Hi, happy to be here. Between two poles, I mean, we can also record one between two ferns. I thought it's like, you know, trendy.
Yeah, it is totally. Because of the fact that Antek is with his co-founders, he's leading the company Aleph Zero and Cardinal Cryptography, as I said, and I take them as pretty sensitive people, sensitive to mechanisms, to relations, to challenges, according to things which are happening in the work environment. And that's why we would like to discuss things which might be challenging when you are leading the growing organization. And we would like to start from the team because of the fact that Aleph Zero and Cardinal Cryptography is working in the blockchain area.
And that might be challenging, I guess. So I would like to ask you, Anthony, to give the audience the context of the company. So the size, the profile, the scale, the stage where you are currently.
Right. So I think like a distinction between the two is in order. So Aleph Zero is a software foundation. You can think of it as an equivalent of, say, Mozilla or Linux Foundation, but obviously much smaller. And Cardinal Cryptography is a for-profit company that deals with implementing various use cases and products built on top of Aleph Zero. So the idea there, it's pretty much standard in the blockchain space for, say, Ethereum Foundation and IOHK or Lisk and Lightcurve or similar other organizations that deal with this very infrastructure layer that we're building with Aleph Zero. As far as the team, I mean, at first there was just a handful of us. So it was 3, 4, 5 people. And it was mostly bootstrapped as well as financed by friends and family. And then over the last 3.5 years, we've faced multiple funny or not so funny issues. But finally, we've managed to close the fundraising with the seed round last year. We still have one big thing to accomplish when it comes to the fundraising. But I think we're pretty much on the right path, which is great. And, you know, with this kind of organization, the skill set has to be very specific when it comes to the team, especially the R&D team. So three of my business partners right now are math PhDs or computer science PhDs. And the idea there is that the technology is innovative to this extent that you actually need scientists to conceptualize it. And this is the first challenge. The second challenge is that you need proper implementation. And the thing here is also that you cannot really use frameworks.
Okay, so instead of going to the tech problems and tech details, I would like to go rather to the organization and people issues. You've mentioned that you had already some issues. I understand that it was rather connected with organization. I mean, like startup financing, etc. So you've already seen the bright and the dark sides of the leading startup. So I would like to go with the values area. So do you have a feeling that the values in the company are already formed? And if the hard experiences, if your hard issues you've moved through were rather destroying or complicating, giving more difficulties, or rather forming? How do you think about the function of the difficulties in startup?
Yeah, so overall, I think that when it comes to organization values, you know, we have two organizations essentially, and values are pretty much similar across both of them. And the idea there is to wait a bit when it comes to forming and sort of finalizing the set of values that we have, because the team is rapidly expanding right now. And it would be probably just unfair to, you know, ask us founders or just ask the core team about what our values are and then just drop them. Or even, you know, doing a workshop that focuses on finding and pinpointing what our values are would be just, well, I would consider it unfair to the employees that we know are going to join us later this year. So we want this to be sort of a bottom-up approach. Of course, you know, it's going to be probably difficult, but I think that right now we all share similar values as humans. And it would be awesome to see if this is actually reflected in the team that we're building. And by the end of the year, we probably should have a value workshop or just try to find the ones that we identify with the most. But right now, it would be probably pretty much generic.
And you've mentioned that you think or you guess that you are sharing values. Many companies are having that experience that at the beginning, they are hiring mainly people from the network, which doesn't mean the network like that we met once or we know, I don't know, each other from the event or from the conference or whatever, but we are just hiring people we know. I don't know if you are already at that stage or what do you think in general about difficulties and issues connected with that type of hiring?
Yeah, overall, we've been mostly hiring from, like you said, our network, meaning that it's people that Adam knew or Michael knew or Matthew knew, as well as on the sort of marketing operations and biz dev side, the ones that I worked with in the past in various companies as an employee. So this is an important thing because if you build your team with sort of our friends and colleagues and acquaintances, And then you want to open yourself up for 100% external recruitment processes, mm-hmm. then it might pose some challenges for the people that are joining this very integrated team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's our job to provide a really awesome onboarding where we can establish this first personal connection,
mm-hmm.
because this later on allows the new employees or mm-hmm. colleagues, or it just makes it easier for them to sort of dive into the topics that are still fairly innovative, I would say, and unknown when it comes to the technology mm-hmm. itself.
And what do you think about process of defining? So I think that it's quite a common problem. The problem I see that it's really hard to define the values. It's really hard to give the naming to the habits. Like even if we are before the workshop value, even if we are before this process of calling out what's the value or the five main values for the company, but it's quite hard, even if we are building startup with 5 of our friends, 10 of our friends, like it's really hard to, you know, change shoes and say, okay, we are people of that and that and that. I know if you've been doing such exercises or it's not the stage already.
So I don't think it was ever named per se.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that, you know, given the amount of conversations we had amongst ourselves and with the core team members,
mm-hmm.
you kind of know when you meet your kindred spirit, right? So mm-hmm. I can drop like, you know, curiosity, transparency, empathy, and so on and so forth. But show mm-hmm. me a startup that doesn't have those.
Yeah, that's why I'm smiling. It's like, you know, young, dynamic, fast growing startup. So yeah, these phrases which are very, very common and you can find it in every job description. So yeah. I think that you are the best person to discuss it from the brand perspective, because when you are trying to give some value as a company, as an employer, and you are giving such, I don't want to call out it like bullshit, because I think it's the problem of awareness that many companies just doesn't pay attention how important it is to be unique, how important it is to be really well-defined as a company, even on a wording level, even on a naming level. And maybe if it's okay for you, we can switch to that because of the fact that you've been working with great brands previously before you started your own company, and you're a brand person according to the market branding, according to the marketing in general as well. I'm wondering, like, what are your thoughts? What are your observations so far according to the brand which is built in the blockchain area? Because we hear a lot of things according to the Bitcoin and the changes and the problems which are appearing on the market. Is it hard to build a brand on blockchain? How you see that?
Right. First, I just want to point out that I don't have an education that's tied to branding. And I know a lot of people that are far better when it comes to branding and sort of defining what that is
mm-hmm.
than me. So I'm going to be basing that based on my own experiences. Branding for startups. This is generally a topic that we could talk about for hours, because if
that's
you
true.
Define brand as, you know, we need to like leave this notion that branding is the logo and visual identity.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to go into this. If you interact with a certain brand, then like, what do you feel overall?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the best way to define it from a point of view of a person that tries to build something is, what do people feel when they interact with your brand or business
mm-hmm.
at every level? From, you know,
what they feel or what they think or what they imagine, like how you
it's kind
you
of
think about
everything.
It.
So first, you kind of, you know, when you think of well-known brands or you buy their products,
mm-hmm.
you buy those products because you love the brand. It's not because they showed you an advertisement on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, it's sort of this mix of expectations, feelings, and reality that you can have an awesome logo, but if your recruitment process sucks, then your brand is not really mm-hmm. on par with the best brands in the space.
Mm-hmm. There is a quote which comes to my mind when you said that people don't remember what you exactly said or what you exactly brought to the meeting, but they remember how they feel with you.
Yeah.
Is it true according to the brand in general?
I think so. I mean, it's also a question of what your business model is and what your plans are. Because if, for instance, COVID was a good example. Like there were a lot of companies that just spun up and had, you know, 10,000 face masks to
mm-hmm.
to sell. There's no point in establishing brand for that. You just go to eBay or the Polish Allegro or whatever you want
mm-hmm.
and just sell that. So mm-hmm. it's not like you have to have a brand. It's your decision that has to be tied to your goals and like what you're trying to accomplish. And when it comes to blockchain, when we first did this market research those 3.5-4 years ago, there really were just a few brands that you could actually feel something about. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because this industry was established by people who were really passionate about the technology itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the technology was and still is the real value behind that. And mm-hmm. as the technology matures and as it finds its use cases and sort of the carves a space in the market for itself,
mm-hmm.
that's when you need to start communicating it to a wider audience that's also outside of the technology itself. And I think that's where the sort of brand building exercises need to mm-hmm. kick in.
And I think it's a great match with what you are saying. It's a great match with employer branding as well, because we can see that many companies are coming to us, I mean, HR Haynes company, which I'm leading, with an issue like, okay, we cannot attract candidates. We are struggling with attracting talents on the market. What can we say or what should we give? Or the most common, how much should we pay to attract these talents? And what can we observe and what is the trend on the market, especially after COVID? I know that COVID haven't finished, but we are having now a very special moment when we see that it's not very location oriented. So there are many companies which are hiring broadly. There are many companies which are hiring not only in US, for example, or in Eastern Europe, but they are hiring also in Poland. So why exactly this person should work for you as a company? This is the most interesting question for us. And it's not about money at all. And it's not about benefits. It's not about the location. It's not about what you can pay, what you can give, but exactly who you are according to the values, what values you live up to, and with whom exactly you are working. These are two the most important things. And also, I haven't seen yet the research according to the Polish market, but I've seen the research according to US market already, which shows that people in COVID or after COVID or in current situation are changing job due to the team. So with whom exactly I can work. And the second thing is the set of values, like not only the values which are saying like, we are a dynamic company, we are growing fast, we are, I don't know, reaching for the stars, or yeah, go to the moon. It's so popular and it's so common that it doesn't mean anything at all. So it is exactly the same with the employer branding. But I think like we don't have this habit yet to think about giving the brand of the employer as a sales process. So we are not used to selling the company. We are still somehow in that mode that candidates should be interested in applying, candidates should be interested in, you know, reaching for more information, trying to be part of the company. And of course, on one hand, from like 5 or 7 even years, we are having this IT and tech environment where you know that you have to find a candidate, you have to source, you have to, you know, give the arguments to for someone to join. But on the other hand, somewhere in our head, we have this mindset like, okay, you should, you know, work hard or try hard to be part of our company. So I understand that it's exactly the same with the branding in general, as you say. So employer branding is just part of the brand in general as a company.
Okay. So I think the origins of work in a young, dynamic team and reach for the stars because we're a fast growing company.
Mm-hmm.
Like you need to think about what are you actually communicating to the folks that you're trying to recruit? Because I wouldn't mind working in an old team, to be mm-hmm. honest. Like that's great. Like I can learn from people who have more experience. I can just, it's more diverse, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it comes to, say, fast growing, like, okay, so what does that mean? Like, what does it communicate to me as a potential candidate? I don't know. Like, is it better than a slow growing company?
Mm-hmm. For sure, it's much more stressful, isn't it? Which is not communicated during recruitment usually. So on one hand, you are saying like it's dynamic and it's fast growing. But on the other hand, many startups are not communicating that that means, I know, we have to double or even triple our revenue each month or each half a year. Yeah. So huge stress and huge pressure is the part of that. And yeah, many companies are not communicating it.
Yeah, there's burnout, there is employee rotation, people are leaving, new people are joining. And you know, it very much depends on what your goals are also as an employee. Do you want to establish relationships at work? Do you want to, how do you perceive work-life balance? Is it a thing? Is it not a thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. And then when it comes to reaching for the stars, I think that, you know, if you go back to this very definition of what a company is, and that the company is just a group of people working towards a common goal,
mm-hmm.
then how else do you want to communicate that?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that, you know, we're building groups and we're establishing nations and everything else
mm-hmm.
to do something together. So with that, I actually totally understand why different businesses keep communicating that they're, you know, going global or reaching for the stars or trying to change the world and so on mm-hmm. and so forth, because there's really not many alternatives. Like, you cannot really communicate that, well, I don't really care, but like,
And even like not having an opinion is also the signal to the candidate and to the market. Like, if candidates are asking, this is the thing which I haven't heard like year ago or 2 years ago. Now I'm getting that questions on the last stage of recruitment. Like, okay, what do you think about diversity? How you are planning the hybrid work, for example, how you live up to that? And it's okay if you don't have an opinion, if you haven't go through that as a funding team, it is okay somehow, but people are also are interested in it. So if today, if you are the company which doesn't have an opinion about diversity, and if you are a leader who is like, oh, I don't care, or which I think it's like more tricky, you think you do the diversity team. So you think and you reckon that you build a diversity team, and you don't, like, you are saying out loud things like, I don't get this problem. I have like 3 recruiters, 3 office people and 1 HR person. So I have diverse teams, and beyond them are like 7 guys who are developers. And that person says that it is diverse team. Well, it's not like, you know, this level of not understanding the problem that you are having not diverse team in, for example, in tech. Like, it's not difficult. It's not an issue. It's not a thing to hire office manager who is a woman. It's not a thing to hire finance person or marketing person who is the woman. It is somehow about thinking about diversity. I'm not saying that the only option is to, you know, have the target that half of the tech team should be women, for example. It's super difficult. And it is not about having that kind of goal, but it is about understanding it and defining it internally, I think.
Yeah, 100%. So when it comes to diversity and the core reason of, or at least my understanding of the core reason of why this is a problem nowadays, especially in the IT space, there's this very sort of cheesy, but then again, somewhat beautiful campaign by Barbie,
mm-hmm.
where they have girls talking about the problems they face as girls from the society, from, you know, their parents and so on and so forth. And for instance, one example is that this 5-year-old girl is saying that parents of boys are twice as likely to Google, is my son gifted,
mm-hmm.
than is my daughter gifted.
Mm-hmm.
The second example is, you know, at the average age of 5, girls stop dreaming about becoming presidents,
mm-hmm.
if they even started.
Mm-hmm.
Then again, you know, science-related toys, for instance, like, you would get that for a boy, but you wouldn't get that for a girl. You would get a Barbie to your girl. And I think this really starts with how you raise your kids,
mm-hmm.
essentially. And it's not something, you know, if you're like 35 and you want to learn hardcore software programming, then it's super difficult for anybody. So if you're not being brought up with this notion of, you know, using your computer and like playing on your computer, this is great. Like, keep doing that and stop limiting. Okay, like, you have 30 minutes before your, like, you know, smartphone mm-hmm. or your PC. This is really problem tied to how people perceive electronics still,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's not the medium that's bad, it's what you're doing on it that needs to be controlled. So if you mm-hmm. sit down next to your son, daughter, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and interact with your Mac, your PC, your iPhone, whatever it is, with them,
mm-hmm.
then you can actually just lead them towards this outcome that you think is going to be the best for them in the long run.
And when we go further as a leader, like, because, okay, you are saying about raising children, what can we do as a leaders according to, I don't know, according to the blockchain, according to decentralization, about thinking about ownership or type of work, because you are having different people raised in different ways. Like, raised in more conservative way, less conservative way, more liberal, etc. So what can we do, in your opinion, or what you are doing, or what you've done and didn't work, and you have lesson learned, which is the answer to, you know, keep different people around the same table?
Right. So I think that, you know, four of us as co-founders, we come from extremely different backgrounds. And somehow we've all found our ways to grow in some way or another. And I think that most people want to grow and develop themselves. But it's way easier if you're given an example as a kid. You know, meet somebody that shows you that something is possible. If you have somebody like that in your family, it's just, okay, he did it, so I can die. And as you kind of like try to work towards that, then you discover all those different things along the way, and your mind opens up. So you're not no longer like, oh, you don't have a, you don't, you're not Catholic, so I'm not going to talk to you. Like, it doesn't work like that. And then again, it's all tied to how you define diversity and what it is. And is it a corporate mindset if you like post a company picture with all the people from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, and so on and so forth? This is absolutely necessary. But then again, it shouldn't be this rule that this has to be in there. It should be somewhat natural. And I'm very much looking forward to the day where we're all just not really noticing this problem as a diversity problem, because it doesn't exist anymore. And this is, you know, it's like with tolerance, like what is tolerance? And I've always had this issue with this word because it somehow implies that you tolerate somebody else, and somehow it positions you a bit higher than that other person.
Yeah, because I think like it's about self-awareness and awareness at all. Like somehow awareness is the part of narration about high intelligence and about high position and good position in society. So if you are tolerating someone or something, you are pretend to be the better, more aware person, having better awareness. So I think it is about scaling somehow in narration, in the feeling.
And then again, like how to build employer brand based on that. I think it starts with actual, like real honesty on our stage, right? I'm not saying that as a, you know, 5,000 plus people company, you need to have personal relationships with everybody, because that's just not possible.
According to that, do you think like speaking out loud about these relations and about that type of leadership and the type of being honest and open, does it have any match with blockchain in your case? Because blockchain is from the basics and from the roots about decentralization. So how it goes with that? Like how you communicate that and how you think about that?
Our organizational values, or like the employer branding that we will try to build, is very much tied into those core values or core promises of blockchain technology itself. And when it comes to decentralization, that's tricky because there are MakerDAO, for instance, or Shapeshift. These are two organizations that announced recently that they are going to become decentralized, meaning that they will dissolve their legal entities. So that would be tricky. And I don't think we're going to go that way anytime soon. But when it comes to decentralizing, for instance, power or decision making to some extent, and I'm not talking about building a like a purple organization, but more of a flat, you know, decision making process where you want to include everybody.
I think that we are having that type of, especially when I'm talking with funders about that, when you are talking about flat structure, there is kind of a fear of totally flat, like turquoise organizations in Poland, because it has strong connection with a mess, with like, you know, no order, anyone can say and decide about anything, and it may be tricky. Do you feel that when you are talking to your co-founders, or to you're talking about that flat structure with your people? Like, I don't know if you observe the same, but I feel that totally flat structure and decentralization in the team organization case is the thing which makes people like anxiety or stressed, or like, I don't know what is it, bad or not.
So I haven't ever built a large organization that is flat. This is the first actual organization that we're building together, so we're experimenting with different approaches. But we definitely want to communicate and sort of make decisions together, and also document of those decisions and provide arguments for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Is that turquoise? I don't think that's turquoise, but it definitely is flattened
mm-hmm.
than, you know, your typical red organization or founder-centric organization. We want mm-hmm. to steer away from that as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where we're going to end up, but that approach is, it definitely draws in people that are self-starters, that want to manage themselves, that are responsible, at least to some extent, and that want to really work in this area, because, you know, it's like this classic notion of you hire somebody and you hire smarter people to tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I know that is pastiche and so on and so forth.
It is.
But it's definitely true. Like, this is who you want on your team.
That's true, that you want to have such people, but a lot of founders are not able to, you know, manage after that because they hire great people and they tell them what to do. It is the most common issue in growing startups. But I believe that it is possible, and I see organizations where it is possible. So
I think it's mostly about swallowing your pride.
Okay, got it. Okay, and the last thing I would like to ask you, according to the blockchain function and the work, because we are working in quite a stressful environment and we don't know what the next wave of coronavirus will bring, the hybrid work, the remote work, on-site work, like, do you think blockchain is having anything in common? How can we use the idea of blockchain? Can it be helpful, and how?
Well, in essence, blockchain is a distributed secure database. And the idea there is that once you make a decision and it's recorded on the blockchain, you cannot take it back. You can mm-hmm. reverse that. So now the question is, what can you do with that? And one example or one idea that we've had was to build a somewhat of a new approach to payroll, how you deal with that,
mm-hmm.
which is your employee has a monthly and yearly budget, which is their salary, essentially. And somehow we just pay this out typically on a month-to-month basis.
Mm-hmm.
But what if, you know, they would decide what they want to do with that? If, say, you want to be paid daily, then you can be paid daily.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be paid weekly, then you can be paid weekly. If you make a decision that you want to use your entire budget at 9 p.m. on a Friday night because you're out drinking and you've run mm-hmm. out of money, then you can also do it technically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you a lot. Thank you a lot for your insights from building company. And what I hear when I talk to you, and I really like it. It's great, in my opinion, that you are not defining it as a done thing. Like, you've built a great organization, but it's still in progress when you are talking about it. Like, you want to do more and you want to develop and you want to go further with your co-founders, with your people. And it's great. So it was a great pleasure to have you here today. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I've got one last thing to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Why people don't understand that HR or people and culture or these departments are absolutely necessary when it comes to building organizations?
Why do they don't understand? I think the reason is because it's quite hard to measure HR. And no matter if we are talking about people and culture, so this more soft relations, conflicts, team building, organization culture part, or we are talking about happiness, which is like the weakest defined part, or we are talking about hiring itself. Hiring is quite easy to measure, but HR in general is quite hard to measure. So it's hard to budget it at the end of the day. And when I talk to investors and when I talk to VCs, for example, when they see the plan for the budgeting, they are having the budget for the product, for the finance team, for the development, of course, for the tech, for the marketing, for the sales, etc. And the first cost to be cut when you are having less money, for example, than you were planning, HR is the first thing to cut because of the fact that it's like quite hard to catch it, quite hard to measure it. And we are still in learning that it is measurable and it is scalable. And that's what we do. Like, we are having exact points which are implemented in an organization. What should you have done, etc. And but it's still building. So it's the pandemic after pandemic effect that we've started to call HR not only the hiring part, but mainly as a people and culture thing. This is the trend which is quite strong in HR now, that we are having separated two roles. Like we are having HR as a general umbrella, but under that we are having people and culture, so communication, conflicts, difficulties, team building. And the second part is the hiring part, which was absolutely the main important for everyone before pandemic. And now we are talking about two separated roles in the companies. And we are talking much more about people and culture, which is great, which is great trend. And I hope it will be continued.
Mm. Yeah, I think we're overvaluing recruitment and undervaluing retention.
Absolutely.
And the ROI you get from great relationships at work.
Absolutely, that's true. And we do a lot of work to grow the awareness in this area. And I think it's also the mistake, like the social mistake, that it's the most easy to communicate. Like, how great is your work culture? It's difficult to describe. How great is your team? We've hired 100 people in a year. Yeah, so it's the easiest way to communicate your success in HR. But I think, like, you know, speaking out loud about communication, about the rotation, this is the right thing. So.
Yeah. I mean, asking founders about how great is their culture, I think it, you know, it leads you nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
The generally just asking your employees, your
ask
team,
people,
and
right?
Ask the people, and they'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Thank you very much once again. It was
Thank
a pleasure.
You as well. Likewise.
Tak. No i to tyle. Mam nadzieję, że nasza rozmowa o kulturze organizacyjnej, o spotykaniu i pracowaniu z ludźmi, z którymi dzieli się wartości, i o budowaniu organizacji, w której bardzo ważny jest brand, przypadła Wam do gustu. Diversity to dla nas obojga ważny temat, więc o tym też trochę było. Dajcie znać, co o tym myślicie. Oczywiście regularnie czekam bardzo, bardzo na Wasze opinie na LinkedInie, na Fejsie, na YouTubie. Subskrybujcie, followujcie ludzi z pracy. Oceńcie, jak się Wam podoba i przekażcie dalej. Jeśli komuś taka przestrzeń rozmowy w necie może się przydać, przekażcie mu proszę info o tym podcaście, który jest w YouTubie, Spotify'u i w aplikacjach do podcastów iPhone'a i Androida. A na dzisiaj wielkie, wielkie dzięki. Zapraszamy po więcej. Trzymajcie się i powodzenia z ludźmi z pracy. Pa!
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.